Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Filibuster here in the Nerd Party, coming to you live from Steven Soderbergh's 2011 film, Contagion. I'm your co-host, not like that, Dallas King, and with me from his self-isolation pod booth all the way down in Edinburgh, it's Lee Hutchison. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I don't know about you, but I've been listening to like a few podcasts recently where they're like, they've had to move to the setup that we're doing, and they're like acclimatizing to it and all the technology and the hassle that goes with it. Whereas it feels like we have been preparing for this moment for 2 years. We are a smooth operating machine.
I know, because it might be a secret that many people don't actually realise, but we actually are pretty much never in the same room for these podcasts. We're always, I'm up in Aberdeen and you're in Edinburgh, and we do it via the wonder of the internet. And yeah, your editing skills make it seamless, and it makes it seem like we're in the same place at the same time. But yeah, no, we're in our self-isolation booths for the foreseeable future, I think it's probably fair to say, because what difference a week makes? Well, make that 2 weeks, because we actually recorded the Invisible Man episode a couple of weeks ago, and now we're looking at an invisible movie schedule. You know, at first we were considering doing a top five post-apocalyptic viral pandemic films, but then we'd thought that that would be far too depressing and a little bit too close to the bone. So instead, we wanted to keep our spirits up, bring some light back to those darkened projection booths, and celebrate our cinemas. So the idea of this episode is we're going to talk about some of our favourite sort of film memories, and you can kind of get to know us a little bit better. So, of course, it's inescapable to avoid the news that due to the coronavirus outbreak, cinemas across the world have gone dark for the foreseeable future, and everyone is now sort of saying it's the time of Netflix and Disney Plus. This is their time. Everyone was saying, oh, they'll never take off. You know, they'll never beat the cinematic experience. Unfortunately, they're their only option at the moment, of course, unless you go to a drive-through cinema in America and stay within your social distancing car, of course. But, you know, Lee, I just wanted to get an idea from you. You know, when was it that you first realised that you loved the movies and loved cinema? Was there a specific moment you can remember?
Maybe sort of like around 1994 or something like that, that I was always sort of, I suppose it was difficult for me because I lived in the countryside. At the time, my nearest cinema was 15 miles away, and then it closed down. It was a cinema in a small little town called Inverurie, and then that poofed away. And I remember just like that summer, I was like a kind of huge Star Trek fan as a little kid, and still am. And I was just determined that I wanted to see something like Star Trek Generations on the big screen, and just like aware of like that being a significant thing that, oh my God, this TV show I like is going to be now having a movie, and being desperate to see it. And then, you know, that always kind of stuck with me, because I suppose that cinema went, and then my nearest one was 35 miles away. It was a long train journey away. It was reliant on my parents to take me to see it. Just now, I suppose, before this virus outbreak kind of went in, I had always the choice of plenty of cinemas, both local, independent, good, and now evil, around me to kind of go see. So it's kind of one of those ones I'm very lucky now, but in the past, it was always like a treat, or I was in the kind of the hands of others for getting to the cinema. So it was always something I loved. It was a treat. I have so many fond memories of going to the cinema as a kid, and it's just something, an experience I'll never take for granted, even though I could up until recently see as much as I wanted, really, whenever I wanted.
Yeah, I know. I guess there is sort of this thing recently where people are sort of saying that, yeah, they maybe took it for granted that they'd just be able to pop down to the local multiplex or independent cinema anytime and watch anything they really wanted. And yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, I think for me, I mean, I grew up with, it was the Star Wars films on telly. I think I had the original one taped off of ITV, and I've played the VHS so much that it probably wore out. I could remember exactly where the ad breaks came in with the old sort of regional Grampian adverts for like Panda Rosa Metals, and you know, the Oxo Cube adverts, you know, for MASH, Get Smash, all that kind of thing. I can remember all those. And but in sort of terms of like the cinematic experience, I think it was probably sort of getting that unlimited card when I sort of moved out in like the local the big sort of Cineworld down by the beach opened up in, I think it was 19, it was a UGC in 1997, the first one I think I saw there would have been The Lost World.
Was it not Jurassic Park? Virgin Cinema?
Was it Virgin to start with,
it
then
was,
a UGC?
Yeah.
Oh no, it was a Virgin, that's right, yes. But I mean, I went to like the Odeon ABC, but that was the one where I had the unlimited card, so I kept going all the time. And then sort of really found that. And then, of course, ended up working at the Belmont and then got my independent fix there. But, you know, it was those times that, yeah, it was the ability to see everything on the doorstep and on the big screen. That was what did it for me. And, yeah, I think, yeah, it's just a little weird at the moment. I mean, it's sad to say. I think the Hunt was the last film I got to see on the big screen before the shutdown happened. What was yours?
Misbehaviour. But I must say, you're kind of talking about the Aberdeen cinemas. They brought back so many memories for me that my parents sort of stay in the west end of Aberdeen, and I used to pass by what was the old Odeon at the time, which has now been replaced with a gym. And I remembered sort of like that. And then I can't remember what the cinema was at the time, but it became The View in sort of the, you know, the other side.
Oh, yeah, that would have been, it was the Lighthouse before
that's
that.
That's the
but
one,
then
yeah.
It had shut down for a while, and then it was the ABC before that. It had three screens, sort of old school. It had one big one on the top, and then underneath it had two screens. I think I saw Aladdin there.
Yeah.
And I definitely saw Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade there as well.
I always remember
probably
those,
a few others, yeah.
I always remember those cinemas just like you had to queue outside to get in. And then when that one at the beach opened up, I remember going there in 97 to see, I think the first one I saw there was Men in Black, and then Speed 2 not too long afterwards. And it was like amazing that you had this cinema with this huge foyer, very American style, where you're like, I don't have to stand around in the rain if I want to go see Ace Ventura Pet Detective or something just now. It's crazy to think like those were considered big innovations at the time, not 4DX or laser print projections. It was like a foyer that you could float around in and had a little shop in, and you could buy a poster or a DVD.
Yeah, I know. It's like, but I kind of missed the Odeon when they actually had their ushers, you know, dressed with waistcoats, bow ties, and they had the torches and all that, you know. That's what I really miss. And, you know, maybe we might see that kind of thing come back. I don't know. It depends, you know, if there's any multiplexes left after all this. I think they may be the first ones to go. So support your local independent cinema. Certainly don't support some cinemas which are maybe laying off their staff 2 days after they closed down, which I thought was a bit harsh. But, you know, they've got priors on that one, I think it's fair to say. But we won't go into that. We're staying positive. So what was the first movie that you remember seeing at the cinema?
I've really tried since you posed this question to me on Friday to try and remember, but all I just seem to get is little flashes of memories of different ones. And like, I remember going to see Little Rascals, like that felt like it was one of my first, but then I would maybe see something like Aladdin. It was just, it's all kind of mishmashed in my head that I can't pick out what was that first one for me. And I'm so frustrated that I'm someone that has this chronological memory of so many films that I've seen, dates, when, the experience, what it was like, but I cannot remember the first film I went to see. And I'm so disappointed in myself. I wish I could get that answer.
If only they'd had Letterboxd back then, eh?
Exactly.
You could have logged it. I mean, yeah, I think I'm kind of the same in that I have memories off going to the cinema, but as we talked about on the podcast a couple of weeks ago with the Nolan thing, you know, Memento, you know, memory can be, you know, you can't really trust memory all the time. It can be manipulated, because I have this memory of, I spent 2 years in Canada. My dad went to work at a hospital in Canada, so we were there for 2 years between the ages 2 and 4. But I seem to remember the first film I saw at the cinema was Return of the Jedi, and that was what I, that sort of started me on my love of Star Wars and the cinema. But I don't know if that's true. I would have to talk to my parents, and they would probably say, no, we never went to see Return of the Jedi in Canada. No, it was probably something completely different. You know, I've got weird memories of seeing Bambi in a Regent Street cinema off of, I think it was actually near Baker Street off of in London. And for some reason they played the trailer for a film about a killer yogurt, and I thought, well, that was really inappropriate in front of a kid's film. But I would have been like 7 at the time. How would I remember this? Although the trailer I did seem to remember, and it was the trailer for Larry Cohen's The Stuff. Now that's a real film. So I don't know how I would have created a memory like that. It's really weird. And also back then, trailers would have been hard lock, i.e. 35mm trailers would have been looped together. So it's much more difficult to make a mistake like that. You know, these days it's just, oh, they happen to press play on the wrong playlist on a digital projector, and then they end up screening, you know, a Annabelle creation, and when they should have been screening the latest Pixar movie, and then, you know, parents and children are running screaming out of the multiplex at the horrors they've just witnessed. But, you know, that's, it's a weird memory. Whether it's the right one, I don't know. I'll have to check with my folks. I'm sure they'll be able to tell me that I'm talking complete rubbish and it was something completely different, but who knows. But next one I had up was, do you remember which film you watched on your first date at the cinema?
Kind of. Like, yeah, like the first time...
Yeah, we're going too far back. The memories are too hazy at the moment.
I remembered, like, yeah, I'll count this as one, but like I went to see for my birthday with like my primary school girlfriend when I was maybe about 10. I went to see Mars Attacks, and that was a pretty awesome experience and stuff like that. That was one of my first underage films I got into to go see. So like that was like a 70-mile round trip to go see those films. I would have to rely on my dad to go see me. So I think he was essentially the chaperone on this date, which was probably like a little mini birthday party, really. But I took a girlfriend, you know, in the loosest possible terms to go see it. So yeah, that film will always have a bit of a special memory for me there. I do remember I had a girlfriend, you know, that I do remember pretty much every film we went to see together, because we always kind of made it our purpose to kind of see rubbish films for the most part. So we'd see things like Made in Manhattan, the S Club 7 movie, you know, things along those lines. Yeah, wow. Double Trouble, I think it was called. So yeah, I remember Mars Attacks being the first one for that. So that definitely is locked in my memory for probably the underage aspect and for kind of taking a girl.
Yeah, no, I think the first one that I can remember, it wasn't like a date, but I think there was a group of us boys, and then that we'd somehow managed to convince a group of girls to go to see the cinema together. So Guy and John, if you remember this, I think we took a couple of girls to see Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves back in 91, back when the charts meant something. And Bryan Adams being, you know, top of the charts for like 16, 17 weeks with Everything I Do It For You. That's a proper tune. And that's what, you know, that's another thing that's missing from cinema these days. The soundtrack, the tie-in song that they release on CD and spends, you know, umpteen weeks at the charts. I know you've been, I think you watched Godzilla recently, didn't you, as part of one of those podcasts you were rewatching, I remember that had like the Puff Daddy one and the Jamiroquai sort of tie-in songs as well. That's what's missing from summer blockbusters these days. That's what, do you miss that kind of thing?
I do miss the CD single of like the soundtrack one. That was always a kind of good one. And yeah, like I always enjoy it when we kind of put together like our A24 project interviews and there's like a really good original song or some soundtrack song from it. I can go, yeah, I can use this as a little kind of segue into the interview. So yeah, it's definitely something I do enjoy and is sorely missing.
Absolutely. But I think, yeah, that was like the first kind of date, but the first like proper sort of date is like a teenager or whatever, I think, is weirdly that I remember is End of Days, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. Somehow ended up taking a girl to see that. I don't think it lasted long after that, to be honest. She wasn't too keen on Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to be slightly serious and gritty in his acting roles, playing a sort of recovering alcoholic cop, taking on Gabriel Byrne's the devil. But I just remember the line about him, you know, yelling at Satan that he's a choir boy next to him. A choir boy! So yeah, there was that one. And, you know, I'm older now, married now, but the first film I think Lucy and I went to see together, I think, was Blue Jasmine, because we were both Woody Allen fans. Kind of still Woody Allen fans, but of course that's not strictly, you know, PC or, you know, kosher to be anymore. But we do have a love of his older movies. And of course, it's all about trying to separate the art from the artist if you can these days. But we both love Manhattan. I'm sure I've talked about it on the podcast before that I proposed to her at the spot in Manhattan next to where the bench is supposed to be. But of course, because of movie magic, there was no bench. They had to bring a bench with them. But, you know, that's beside the point. But that's another one there. So that was me.
I do remember a first date with this, like my first proper like high school girlfriend. We went along to
high
see...
school. You're not American. Come on.
Sorry, secondary school. Well, I get mixed up because I always call it secondary school, and then I came to Edinburgh, and everyone calls it high school here.
Do they?
Like, like it's totally like an Aberdeenshire thing to call it secondary school. So it's been sometimes like it's been kind of hammered out of me because when I will say secondary school, people will think I went to some sort of like private school, not some sort of school in some little town in Aberdeenshire. So it's kind of like I end up just saying high school sometimes. So,
Did you have a prom then? Because I had a student working with me at the library recently, and she was needing to switch dates because she was wanting to have the afternoon off to get ready for prom. And I'm like, what? What is this prom nonsense? You're not American. Stop it. Stop it. Yeah. All this American stuff they're trying to take over here.
But my first proper secondary school girlfriend, we went to see a double bill. Well, it was an unintentional double bill, so we went to get like Pizza Hut buffet, which was like kind of standard
choice
at the
excellent
time. And then we went to see Charlie's Angels 2 Full Throttle. And then because the problem was like trains were so irregular back to like the village that we were from, we missed that, and we decided like, why don't we go see another film? So we went to see Bruce Almighty, and I still have the cinema stuff from that date in my little memory box. I think that was my first date double bill as well, so that was something
cool. So next up on my question is, I did have top three screenings, but I wanted to then break that down because I had too many answers really. So first up, I'm going to ask for you for your top three event cinema screenings. So this could be anything where there's maybe a bit of extra curricular activity around the screening, so it's not just within your standard cinema setting. So it could be like a live orchestra or secret cinema or something like that. So we could go back and forth, I guess.
So I'll go with my number three, and that was the Star Trek 2009 with a live orchestra. This is tough. Interstellar with a live orchestra. I'm going to go with that one because, I've mentioned the Star Trek one before, but the Interstellar one was like particularly special because it was the day after my birthday. Christopher Nolan was in attendance. The event kicked off with Christopher Nolan, the scientist guy that was behind sort of Interstellar, Stephen Hawking, and Dr. Brian Cox, all giving sort of like a pre-film science talk. And then sometimes you go to these film events and it's just like a generic kind of composer with the film composer just sort of like giving an introduction. But we got Hans Zimmer, who conducted the entire score along to Interstellar, and it was just absolutely amazing. I remember they had like a little red carpet as well before the film, and I was like watching that go in, and then I was like, right, I better head into my door now. And then I remembered sort of hearing a noise just behind me and turning around, and it was Stephen Hawking, and I nearly collapsed on top of him because he was coming in right behind me. So I was very close to sort of incapacitating Stephen Hawking. So that's a kind of special memory that I don't think actually got included in the theory of everything. But yeah, to hear that score with like the organ in the Albert Hall was just absolutely stunning. And what surprises you sometimes with these films, and especially the live score, is what people will like applaud to. And I remembered sort of at the end of like the 15-16 minute build up of like this Christopher Nolan, this Hans Zimmer score, as like the ship is trying to dock with the station, and then it explodes, and then there's just silence, and then the crowd just erupted into applause. It was absolutely fantastic, and one of those kind of special nights and memories.
Absolutely. I love the way you diplomatically put a noise behind me, and I just knew exactly what you were going to say. It was the wheelchair, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think, I can't remember, it was just like maybe his crowd or something like that, the whole mix of things. It was crazy.
Yeah, no, I saw Blade Runner with a live orchestra score at the, well, it wasn't really an orchestra, it was a very pared down orchestra because a lot of it is synths and stuff like that, but I remember people just sort of laughing and then cheering when the November 2019 came up, because we saw it, for some reason they didn't program it in November 2019, they programmed it just about like the last week of October, but people did get a chuckle out of that. And I think there's been a few, like I remember like the Back to the Future one at the Edinburgh Film Festival, I think that was my first one, and it's probably still to be beaten, I think, just because of the way that the live orchestra came in at the bit where Earth Angel, where the Marty pops back up after his dad kisses his mum for the first time. So yeah, that was always a great one for me. But for me, I'm going to pick first one of my favourite sort of extracurricular things, and this was the Edgar Wright takeover at the Prince Charles Cinema, where they played back-to-back his entire filmography at that point, including both series of Spaced. Edgar also was there in attendance at the beginning, the middle and the end to do sort of Q&As and stuff like that, and we were probably one of the very few audiences to see his tester footage for Ant-Man, which sadly never came to pass. But that was a very, very long, sweaty, smelly night. But it was just great to have that kind of audience all together and loving every moment of it. And I'd never seen Fistful of Fingers before, and it was quite something as well.
I remember being so ultimately jealous of that. Like, I remember seeing that and like thinking, oh, that would be something I would love to go to. And nowadays I would book the ticket and head on down. But before, I never sort of conceived that I could probably realistically do that and it was worth the money. And yeah, I'll never be kind of not jealous of that, especially when like your picture pops up with you sort of in the front row with the guys. That's like the kind of experience that the Prince Charles Cinema does so well.
Yeah, no, for some reason I was one of the very few people who was dressed up. I was dressed up as Shaun of the Dead, and yeah, it was quite something to actually take a cricket bat down on the train to London and back up again. So walking around London with that was quite interesting. You get a few odd looks, it has to be said.
Yeah.
So what have you got for us next?
So I have gone with another trip to the Prince Charles Cinema, and that is the Wes Anderson all-nighter that I attended. So I was in London for Casino Royale with a live orchestra, and just like the way the timing was would have made it really difficult to get back to Edinburgh that night. So I decided, like, I'm going to stay in London. And I always want to go to sort of these Prince Charles like all-nighters, but they're so difficult to get to because I'll maybe be down in London with a girlfriend or friends, and it's hard to go, right, I'm away for the rest of the evening to go watch films in a kind of big screen or something along those lines. But this was one of those ones where the kind of stars all aligned like perfectly. So I went along to that, and I, instead of getting an accommodation, I brushed my teeth in the toilet, and then I settled in for like the all-nighter, just made myself as comfortable as possible, and I watched every single film from his filmography all the way up to Grand Budapest Hotel at the time. They had all his adverts sort of in between, little special kind of feature moments. Like, it was such a well-curated event. And it was my first opportunity to see some of these films on the big screen, and it was just amazing. Like, I absolutely love that cinema, and I wish I could go to more of these all-nighter events, but unfortunately it's just so difficult to kind of get the stars to align. But hopefully one day in the future. I know recently I had to miss out on a Star Trek 1-6 marathon, which is my dream to go to, because I was in London already, but my girlfriend didn't indulge the idea of me just like, well, why don't you head back up the road, I'll stay, and then I'll come back the next day. So I'm forever waiting for another opportunity like that.
Oh, I'm sure you'll get another chance at some point. And yeah, no, they are always good. And you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but actually it's the cheapest hotel in central London you're probably actually going to find.
Yeah.
Okay, next for me, I've picked something from 2009 it was, and this was Empire MovieCon 2 at the BFI South Bank. This was an event that you paid, back then I think it was something ridiculous, like about 25 or 30 quid, and it was for the whole weekend, and you sat down and you watched previews of movies, you got clips, trailers, you know, it was basically like a showreel for what was coming up. And you know, you'd have stars coming along doing Q&As. This was when Robert Downey Jr. appeared twice over the weekend, once to introduce Iron Man 2 footage, and then it was also Sherlock Holmes as well. And yeah, that's a true movie star if you just were in the room for that. And this was also, I think they had that year, they had previews of, I think it was District 9. It was a secret screening. The year after, they did Scott Pilgrim. That's when it got far too big and sold out, because I remember Edgar Wright had tweeted that it was basically, it was a surprise film, and then everyone booked in advance, and then they ended up having to then move it the next year to the O2, and it just wasn't the same. But I remember that because I've met people there that I've stayed in touch with on social media ever since, and whenever we're down in London at these sort of film events, we always see each other, so that's always good, meeting sort of kindred spirits in the world of film as well. But also, I won the Kim Newman Bastard Hard movie quiz out of, you know, a cinema screen of about 500 people, so, you know, that was a big deal. I got a signed copy of Empire by Stein by Steven Spielberg, a signed script of Inglourious Bastards, and about 50 to 100 Blu-rays and a Blu-ray player, so it was a good day's work.
That is an incredible haul. I can't believe that.
Yeah, no. The years afterwards, I don't think the prizes were maybe as good. I think, yeah, they over-egged the cake on that one, I think. But
you probably got like a rustle of the bag nowadays if they did that again.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So what have you got as your number one pick for event cinema?
Yeah, one of those ones I kind of went all in on was like, I always felt like when I was like a kid, like midnight movies, like marathons, etc., was like something that you got in America, maybe like the 70s and 80s, and just was not sort of a cultural thing here in the UK. And I remembered sort of like when they started to kind of creep back in again, I was like always keen to take part in them. And one of my favorite ones that I attended was an Avengers kind of marathon just on the eve of Age of Ultron coming out. So it kind of worked out being like a 24-hour marathon for me. Otherwise, it was sort of like 20 hours. So how it worked out for me was I was lucky enough to win tickets to see Age of Ultron like 2 days early, but it started like this preview was like 5 hours before or 4 hours before the marathon that I'd booked in to see started. So I got to see Ultron early on the IMAX, and then I finished about like 10:30 at night, and then I trekked across the other side of town to another cinema to start this Avengers marathon of like, they showed all the films excluding
Incredible Hulk, yeah, because of the Universal thing.
Exactly. So I settled in at midnight to that, and everyone's like, their main aim is to get to Age of Ultron and enjoy that, whereas I had just seen it. So this film was basically my bookend. So I like got comfortable in my seat. I had a free seat next to me, which meant that I was able to spread out a little bit, which was really good. And I basically just watched all these kind of Marvel films one after another. Like you would kind of go down to sort of this like Weatherspoons and get like some breakfast snacks, eat up, back up for more films. And then by the time Age of Ultron came out, which I was kind of mixed on from the previous night, I kind of started to doze off, whereas everyone else had been sort of dozing through the other films. I kind of was like, oh, I've made it to the end, I'm not really fussed about this film, I've just seen it, and kind of slept through most of it, whereas everyone else on the screen was kind of wide awake. It was such a good kind of experience and stuff like that. People dressed up, and it was felt like a real event to take part in.
Yeah, no, I love sort of stuff like that. I mean, I've done, I think the biggest thing that I did was part of when I was working at the Belmont. I mean, we did the Dark Knight trilogy, which involved me dressing up as the Joker, and we had a guy dressed up as Batman, sort of doing entertainment stuff, quizzes and things in between the screenings and stuff to keep everyone going. And but I think the most dedicated one for the Belmont audience was probably the Lord of the Rings triple bill, all on 35mm, which I was having to project. And then, you know, we even did like pre-orders for food and stuff, and like unlimited refills on popcorn and stuff. So it was like a major, that was a good 12-hour day.
Oh,
I think,
God, I did
one.
That
so
too. Yeah, did you I did it hungover. Yeah. I did it hungover in Edinburgh. And you never realize until you watch it back to back that is an incredibly lot of walking that joke is true.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't know. Do you remember the first time you saw Return of the King? Did you get up out of your seat on the first fade down after Mount Doom, when it sort of, when like Sam was like holding Frodo and it sort of faded to black? I was getting ready to get up, and then I was like, oh, it's not finished. And then, of course, they've got that multiple joke of it's ending after another ending after another ending, and you're like, oh, God, you just want to leave now.
Well, yes and no. Like, I went to see that one in Aberdeen. We all headed through like as mates to go check out the Return of the King. It felt like our Star Wars at the time. Like, we got to live and experience that. And I was actually just yesterday thinking I should kind of watch these movies in sort of isolation. But what I was surreal about it was that View Cinema that I went to see at put in an intermission where they stopped the movie for a little while so everyone could have snacks, and they brought in like ice creams, etc., that people could have. But we were all really stressed because this was like a 5 o'clock at night, 6 o'clock screening. It's a long film anyway, and we're all keeping an eye on the time of the clock because we've got to get back on a train back to our village at the time. And we're just like, oh, this is going to be tight, this is going to be tight. And the film just like ended and you're just like, right, out the door. And everyone just literally bolted it for the mile between sort of the View Cinema and the train to get back at home at time. And I should add as well, I did attend one of your Dark Knight trilogy screenings as well. I have seen that film several times as a triple bill, but I came up to the Aberdeen Cinema because I was like, oh, I want to go see it. I love the Belmont Cinema. Always happy to support an event like that. And me and my girlfriend at the time went up. And I remember sort of chatting with you on Twitter. I was like, oh yeah, we're coming up for the film. And you were really generous as a host and gave us free t-shirts from Dark Bunny or Last Exit to Nowhere. So that was greatly appreciated, Dallas.
Oh yeah, you were the furthest travelled, weren't you?
So
that was it, furthest travelled for the screening. Because yeah, dedication, I like that. You know, and that kind of thing needs to be rewarded, I think. So yeah, you're most welcome. Do you still have the t-shirt?
I think it's in some sort of charity shop these days or something like that. Or maybe I lost it in the relationship divorce.
Ah, I see. So that brings us to... Oh, no. I've still got one more, don't I?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Of course, nearly forgot it there. And number one is, for me, it's got to be the Blade Runner Secret Cinema, which is one of my all-time favourite nights I've ever had in my life. Blade Runner is my favourite film of all time, and the chance to sort of disappear into that world for a couple of hours before it was seeing the screening was just... amazing. I mean, the level of detail of recreating sort of Los Angeles 2019 in 2018 in London in a warehouse was fantastic. The acting was amazing. You know, they actually had a proper story going around. You know, we were sort of looking to try and get one of the people inside the club to get us into a secret mission and stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun. And, you know, sort of the way they sort of tied the story, it kind of tied into the blackout that they mention in Blade Runner 2049. So they'd really done their homework, and it was just an amazing sort of night. And I did the Star Wars one a couple of years before, but it wasn't as good. I think I just didn't have enough time. I went with a few friends, but I just didn't have enough time to properly sort of get into the storyline. We were sort of there for maybe like an hour sort of wandering around, and then it was time to watch the film. So it wasn't really as good. But that one, I really made the most of it as much as I could. So yeah, no, it had to be Blade Runner Secret Cinema for me.
Yeah, those secret cinemas are so good. Like I finally managed to do one last year, the Casino Royale one, and I thought it was such a great experience. I went myself, just the way it kind of worked out schedule wise. I kind of went along, loved it, and I kind of was like, oh, I wonder what the next ones are going to be. And I'm sure there was one probably on the cusp of being announced before all this kicked off, sadly.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, they always do sort of Dirty Dancing around the sort of start of summer. And I mean, Jurassic Park is one I would love to see them do, sort of where you sort of arrive in Isla Nublar and stuff and get taken around, you know, spare no expense, get taken around the labs and stuff like that before going out and getting attacked by dinosaurs or something. So maybe one day they'll do that one. That's one I'd probably like to see. But the next category I had was sort of top three sort of audience moments or regular screenings that you've been at. Maybe it was something that happened in the screening, or there was just a moment that brought the audience together. I mean, what sort of sticks in the mind for you?
I always think of it when I went to, this is why I pushed it back a little bit earlier, because I knew this would come up for this one. It was when I went to sort of the Star Trek films with a live orchestra, and it was Star Trek Into Darkness, which is a much maligned, and you know, there are things that can be, you know, put against the film in terms of sort of quality in certain points or some of the creative decisions. But, you know, the Albert Hall is this huge venue, thousands of fans, you know, people that paid good money to attend an event like this. And there's a great moment when like the Enterprise just drops underneath the clouds and then it just soars back up. The music's kind of crescendos, and like there was this spontaneous applause and reaction. And yeah, it was just little moments like that that you think, a film that, you know, the critics and some of the fans have kind of, you know, had their piece to say on, can still, in the right event and surrounded by sort of a positive energy, can do something like that. And it was just completely unexpected, but one of these things that you get from an event like that, and it just put a huge smile on my face.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've had like individual reactions to films where it's been almost slightly awkward, like Fight Club, like when the twist happens, I shouted out loud in the screening, no f-ing way. Apologies, you'll have to bleep that one out. Because I just couldn't believe it. And I actually went straight back in and watched Fight Club again and was like, oh, of course, it makes total sense. Duh. And then there was like the Raid 2, the sort of kitchen fight at the end. I broke out into spontaneous round of applause at the end of it. I was the only one who did that, so I had to then stop because everyone looked at me a bit weird. But in terms of like overall audience reactions, I mean, it's fairly recent, but I mean, Avengers Endgame, I think everyone was so excited. You know, this was the culmination of a 10-year journey. And I think from the moment that Cap holds Mjolnir and then does the whole Avengers Assemble thing, that last half hour was full of so many whoops and cheers, and just I've never seen an audience sort of so excited and with such a big grin on their faces. And it was just, yeah, that sticks in the mind for me as one of the sort of film brings people together, and there was, you know, 300 odd people all enjoying the same thing, and that's what cinema is, and hopefully we can get back to that fairly soon. Who knows what film it will be? Maybe it'll be Tenet by Christopher Nolan. Maybe that's the film that will bring everyone together. It could be the biggest film of all time if it drops just as cinemas reopen.
It feels like that's the next thing that's going to get cancelled, doesn't it? It feels like it's got to happen, doesn't it?
It'll give us more time to do the retrospective.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just start to drag them out to every like 5 months.
Yeah. So what's your second pick?
So this was another one where I was kind of thinking like, what would it be? And I went with sort of the Dark Knight trilogy screening at the Cameo Cinema. And so basically, like, the way it worked was that the films in Dark Knight Rises in the UK had to be shown at 5 a.m. to sync up with East Coast time. They couldn't dare let us see it 5 hours early. So the Batman Begins began at 11 p.m. and then it was like Dark Knight was at 2:30 or something like that. But what we got was like, we took up an entire row at the Cameo, like, you know, I don't know how many seats that is, maybe 20, 25 seats, all of like me and my mates. So we went to see it and we got to like have this amazing breakfast before the film, like muffins, pancakes, fruit. And then we went to watch this film and it was so spectacular to like share that moment with like friends. Just like, it's the sort of thing you think of like when you're a kid of like, oh, no way could we get like an entire group of people all along to see a film like this, and like filling like the entire sort of back row and just enjoying like this huge experience together. It was something really special. And I remember this whole screen was like packed apart from one seat right next to me, because me and my mate had tickets to go see an IMAX at 12:30, and he was like, I don't want to watch it at 5 in the morning, I'm going to go home and sleep and then we'll go see it. So I'm like fully refreshed to see it in the best possible way. So yeah, it was kind of funny, this like solo event, but just with this one solitary seat for the climax.
I do remember seeing Dark Knight Rises, and you know, it does get a lot of stick, but I thought it was wonderful. And I think I remember for getting almost kind of choked up and thinking, oh my god, they're actually going to kill Batman, they're going to kill Bruce Wayne in this. And then also my mate had not really read the comics, so when Marion Cotillard reveals that she's Talia al Ghul, he's like, what? He's like, he had no idea that that was a thing in the comics. And so I was like, I kind of knew it was coming, but yeah, he was like proper shocked when we saw it together. So yeah, that was, I think I was choked up because I think superhero movies are never going to get this good again. And as I would argue, maybe they haven't. You know, the Marvel movies are good, but I think Nolan's trilogy is untouchable as for consistent quality all the way through. Would you agree? Do you concur? I mean, we'll probably get onto this in the Christopher Nolan retrospective.
We
should probably leave it for that. So actually, I'm going to have to continue the Nolan theme here, because one of my favourite all-time audience reactions is, and there's been a couple, there's been movies where I have, when I was working at the cinema, I would go in specifically for just to see audiences react. So like The Descent, with the sort of night vision camera jump, The Orphanage, when the woman gets hit by the bus and then comes back afterwards. It's like, that was a moment just to see audiences crap themselves. But I just remember the end of Inception and the totem just spinning round and round and round and round and round, and then cutting to black, and then an entire audience all sort of going, oh, what? Come on! I mean, it was just an amazing reaction, and I just loved to go in whenever it was on at the Belmont and just watch people do the exact same thing every time. That's when you know a filmmaker is good, when people are so invested in the story that they are annoyed that they... I mean, it's true, it's up to your own interpretation how that goes, whether or not he's still in a dream or not, but I mean, to have an entire audience react the same way, that is the dream for a filmmaker, surely.
Exactly. It's one of those ones, I believe it or not, I have not watched Inception since the cinema, and I have no idea why, but I'm really excited to revisit it. I don't know why I've not watched it again. So yeah, I know it's really exciting for
this is
for me,
that's going to be a very interesting episode to record then, if you've not actually seen it in 10 years actually now.
Wow. I bought like two bloody volumes of it, like, two editions of it since the film's come out, and I've somehow never got around to watching them. So yeah, I can't wait to finally dive in again.
Well, that's something to do on lockdown, isn't it? You know?
Exactly.
So what have you gone with as your top pick?
Yeah, it's one of those ones that I was trying to get it so hard to kind of think of like different little moments. And I think one of the kind of reactions kind of for me was sort of like going to see Blade 2. So it was my birthday, it was a long time ago now. And we decided that we were going to sneak in underage to go see Blade 2. I think it was an 18. We were maybe 15, 16 at the time, and there was like a group of us that we'd all bought tickets to go see one specific film, and then we were gonna go in and see Blade, but a bunch of my mates kind of were like scared of like, oh, we can't do it. And
poor ushering at the cinema, clearly, if you were gonna sneak in and not get caught to go into one screen for what, a PG film, and then sneak into an 18.
Something along that. I mean, we did one which was much worse, where I think we discovered a trick like in the old View cinema. So it was like, you know, big multinational kind of. I remember we went to see Austin Powers Goldmember, and then we all just like hung around in the toilet and then walked in to see what's it called? The guy who died with the stingray and stuff like that.
Steve Irwin.
We went to see his movie. So we were like, it was like a 2-for-1 in our head. But yeah, I can't remember what the film was that we just bought the ticket for, but we, like, the people's backs was turned like at the View because they would let you downstairs. And we just went, right, go, go, go. And we went in to see like Blade 2, and our hearts were like absolutely pounding. Like, we did
thinking
it.
Thinking you were going to get caught. Someone's going to come in and check your tickets.
Exactly.
Or it was sold out and there was 5 extra people.
It was pretty tight for a Saturday night. And we watched it and we had like the best time. And the audience reaction for a film like that, like, it was like the first time I got to see sort of like a big kind of like gory action film like that in the cinema, where like there's, you know, it's such visceral action and blood spatter that really is getting like the audience kind of going. And it was so exciting to be kind of privy to that one and have the added thing of like going, wow, we're kind of underage and got in.
I do love Blade 2. I mean, you're younger than me, so you probably didn't have the same reaction when Luke Goss appeared as the main villain. Were you a Bros fan growing up? Or?
No, but I was a fan of the Bros documentary. So that's
great,
that's
documentary. Fantastic document. I mean, yeah, Conkers, bring them back. You know, why aren't people playing Conkers anymore? Maybe, of course, you can't play Conkers these days because you'd have to be within, you know, 2 meters of each other. So yeah, Conkers will have to wait.
Maybe
one day, like, Bros.
Maybe we can do a social isolation podcast commentary to the Bros documentary. It's what the people might want.
Well, I was thinking, you know, we're going to have to sort of think about what we do for content with the lack of films coming into cinemas. We're going to have to come up with some new content. So we could maybe do film commentaries where we both watch a film and record a commentary at the same time and then edit together. Ooh.
What we should do is make a poll and put it out on Twitter. What will be the first one? As long as it's not like 2 hours long, I reckon we could.
Something, a 90-minute film or something like that would be good. Yeah. Yeah. Well, come, okay, yeah, I like that. Is it going to be Francis Ha?
Well, what
it's
we can
under
do,
90 minutes.
We can put, I'll pick two, you pick two, and we put it out as a poll, and the winner gets decided by the people.
I like that. Okay, yep, we'll do that. Cool. Awesome. So, first one for me, number one, it's got to be going back all the way to 1997 to the Odeon on Justice Mill Lane, queuing up outside for Star Wars A New Hope, the special edition. You know, this was like you say, back in the time when you know the cinema wasn't big enough to wait for the next screening to go in. You know, this was when there was only one screen had it on, you know, so we were there waiting, and there was just such a, this was the first time a lot of people had been able to see it on the big screen, you know, with dodgy new special effects for the most part, but never mind. And, you know, I remember everyone had like their toy lightsabers. Everyone was really excited. There was people driving up and down Justice Mill Lane in their car, blaring the soundtrack out. And there was that just sense of joy about being able to see Star Wars on the big screen for the first time. And yeah, it's a screening that I'll never forget. I think it was just, it's one of the top screenings for me ever. It's just like, yeah, seeing that moment when like the 20, I mean, that's the thing about the Star Wars film that isn't as good these days. They miss the 20th Century Fox logo. That's what you want. And of course, no film these days will have the 20. Isn't it weird that Underwater, starring Kristen Stewart, was the last 20th Century Fox film to be released in cinemas? That's how you go out with Underwater. Admittedly, I kind of liked Underwater. I don't think you did, but you know, I was kind of a fan of it. Yeah,
I think was Misbehavior Fox Searchlight?
I think, yeah, I think it was the last Searchlight film that we get released in cinemas. So it was the last Searchlight, yeah. That's how, yeah.
Fitting for my last trip to the cinema then. It was the last one from the Fox brand. Yeah.
Not with a bang, but with a bit of a whimper. But never mind. So final category. There may be a bit of crossover here, I'm sure. And that's just basically asking you for your top three cinemas. You know, we're talking about, we're going to have to support cinemas, you know, when they reopen and stuff like that. So which three would you like to give a shout out to?
So the Belmont Cinema, it was the cinema that I first started seeing independent movies in Aberdeen. And like, it was a place that I would spend my work money, basically, that I was getting from working in a Tesco at the time. I would go there and like, sometimes I would have like an afternoon off school and I would make long trek to Aberdeen to see things like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, 25th Hour, films like that. You know, I just had the best time. The Prince Charles Cinema, I'm like a lifelong member. Like, I've got a membership card from it. And maybe if I'm lucky, if I get to go to the cinema a couple of times of the year, I just think what they do in terms of like putting on films and screenings is like my idea of like the perfect cinema. I absolutely love it. I always thought of like my idea of like a podcast side for a while. And I know like they have a really good podcast called the Pod Charles Cinema Podcast, where they talk about film, dive into some of the films in their schedule, and kind of preview films to come. Really good podcast. Actually, I recently joined their Patreon since they've kind of fortunately been kind of shuttered for now. But I always thought it'd be quite fun to do a podcast, whether it's like the Prince Charles or the Music Box in Chicago or something like that, where it would be like to do a podcast and you sort of like watch along with the films that that place is picking for that week. So, you know, you could maybe pick in like some sort of Arnold Schwarzenegger all-nighter film, some sort of like prestige picture, and some sort of like retro kind of screening, and just like reviewing them. So that's always been my idea. And I've got to give it to the Film House as well. It's potentially got an exciting, bold future ahead of it, and it's always one of the, it's like the proper independent cinema that we've got here in Edinburgh that seems to kind of treat its customers well. You know, it's got great films, always giving opportunities to films by women, you know, films all around the world. It's a kind of cinema that we desperately need right now, and I can't wait for that to open up again in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, they picked a hell of a week to announce a £50 million proposal of a new six-screen cinema in the middle of Festival Square, didn't they? Wow. Talk about timing. But hopefully, I mean, it'll still go ahead in some form or another, because, yeah, no, that'd be good to get a new hub for film in the centre of Edinburgh, because, I mean, yeah, there's hopefully big things happening for film in Edinburgh, along with the film studio that was announced. I mean, I think it started off as like a fish gutting warehouse that the Avengers took over when they filmed there, and they're now sort of putting money in to become, because Scotland's, you know, it's got Fast 9, sadly, gutted that it's been delayed a year, so we don't get to see Edinburgh on the big screen with John Cena, but you know, you can't see him anyway. Hey. always a chance to get a reference in. And you know, Glasgow has recently had the Batman filming as well. So, you know, it's all about Scotland at the moment. In terms of picks that I have, fairly similar, actually. Prince Charles, you know, I'm going to be buying a membership when I get some of my holiday money refunded. I'll be putting buying that lifetime membership, because I've always been meaning to. And like probably like you, I'd probably get down a couple of times a year. But, you know, very handy for the London Film Festival, which will probably be the next film festival, hopefully, fingers crossed, that we'll get to attend. I've picked the Glasgow Film Festival. I love the GFT. You know, the Glasgow Film Festival is brilliant, but the Glasgow Film Theatre is fantastic. You know, they've recently sort of taken out the Cosmo Bar and put in a third screen, but GFT 1 has just got a sort of special kind of atmosphere. I love that. Their programming is always top-notch, and the work with the festival is always fantastic. So big shout-out to GFT and Charles. And then, yeah, would it be any surprise that I was going to pick the Belmont Film House as my number one? I mean, I worked there for 13 years. You know, I went... first started going as a customer, seeing films like Memento, Shadow the Vampire, and In the Mood for Love. Got a job there as duty manager, ended up being general manager, also a projectionist, had some amazing screenings there. But you know, it's also the place where I met my wife. So Lucy started working there in this August of 2013, and I sort of saw her and went, wow, she's gorgeous, I want to know her. You know, helped her operate the coffee machine one day, and then, you know, I was a person who didn't really socialise with staff, but then organised a new girls night out, so I get the chance to talk to her outside of work. And then, you know, she asked me if I wanted to see a movie. It turned out to be the One Direction movie, but you know, after that we talked about movies for hours, and then, you know, like they say, the rest is history. And then we're now happily married. How long that will last, having, you know, being on lockdown together 24 hours a day, we'll have to see. Might be a twist in the story to come, but the Belmont is always going to have a special place in my heart, and I hope that it comes back bigger and better than ever. And yeah, we know we need to make use of these independent ones, because, you know, I think it's looking like some of the bigger chains have more to lose in terms of they've got shareholders and whatever, and they seem to be less caring of their staff and customers at the moment. So I think it's amazing how the independents are the ones that are looking after the staff and doing everything to make it. So do support your local cinema. Like I say, a lot of them have got sort of things at the moment where you can do sort of Patreons for podcasts or other content that they do, buy a membership, buy a gift voucher or something for that, so when they do reopen, you know, it keeps them going over until they reopen, and then you can get the benefits of when they're there. So yeah, that's a shout out to them. And yeah, if you get any other sort of shout outs, I guess we've got a recommendation, you know. Yeah. We always do a recommendation every week. At the moment, it's probably difficult to recommend something you could see on the big screen, so perhaps you've got something for the small screen, or maybe it's something completely different away from the world of film. What have you picked for us this week?
I've gone with so if you can't get into any of these cinemas, I highly recommend the Prince Charles Cinemas podcast, the Pod Charles Cinecast. It's one of my kind of favourite film podcasts, because it takes you sort of behind the scenes of sort of the Prince Charles Cinema, and you kind of get to meet all the different staff there, the projectionists who talk about kind of putting together these like 35mm marathons and events. They talk about sort of like the, you know, what it's like to, you know, work at one of the kind of the best independent cinemas in the kind of the country. There's some great stories about where they talk about like Paul Thomas Anderson coming in to watch dailies of Phantom Thread on sort of their screens, Tarantino visiting. You know, it's just a really cool insight into how this cinema works. And like they talk about their kind of previews of what's coming up, take you behind the scenes of some of the making of the films. It's just a really cool podcast hosted by a really wonderful chap called Jonathan, who's fantastic on Twitter as well. So yeah, my thoughts are with all that kind of staff just now. They released an episode today sort of talking about what it was like to kind of close the cinema and the process of like they have to like refund everyone individually for all these upcoming booked screenings and everything like that. And it's just, again, really fascinating to see how it all works, but kind of reminds you sort of like the, you know, people are sort of behind these screens. And I know people get the option as well to, you know, I got it with like a theater thing recently where it was like, hey, you can get refunded, or maybe you can like defer your ticket, or you can just like gift the money to us and stuff. And I think if you're listening to this and you have like the opportunity to get a membership, check out their podcast, get like a $5 a month Patreon, or you know, get a gift voucher for that cinema, I think it's one that we really need to support. I know it's a big fan, we're big fans, Edgar Wright, you know, all these filmmakers, we need a place like this. And check out their podcast, it's so cool.
Absolutely. I mean, I know they're, at the moment their Vitagraph says we'll be back, but I'm looking forward to the day that I'm pretty much guarantee they'll probably go with a quote from Clerks and go, "I can assure you we're open," and have that up on the Vitagraph. So I'm looking forward to that day. For me, I've picked something that you can watch indoors. I was sort of scrolling through Mubi, trying to find a film to recommend, and then I thought, oh, actually, I could just recommend Mubi, because I know certain, I think Filmhouse and Belmont Filmhouse members at the moment, to keep them tidied over, they can get a free couple of months subscription to Mubi. But I let the big mouse win. That's the problem. It got on my head, and I thought, you know, Disney Plus, for all the moaning that people did about the fact that, you know, it was coming in late, you know, we did the same thing with Parasite, and it turned out to be launched at the perfect time, the weekend it won the Oscar, and then it's now become the highest grossing foreign language film of all time in the UK, beating The Passion of the Christ. But I was thinking of Disney Plus, and I'm thinking they are launching tomorrow, actually that's yesterday because this goes out on Wednesday, and they are releasing the day after all the kids are now off school and at home, and the parents must be thinking, thank goodness, they can just stick the kids in front of the telly and watch The Mandalorian. However, I'm afraid UK audiences, you still have to watch it on a weekly basis, even though everyone in America has already seen it and they could have dumped it all at once. You're going to have to watch it on a weekly basis. But The Mandalorian is probably the best thing available on Disney Plus at the moment. It is a serial starring a bounty hunter who looks a hell of a lot like Boba Fett but isn't Boba Fett, and of course stars the meme and toy frenzy that is the child, not Baby Yoda. He looks a lot like him, but he's just called the child, and it takes a while to get going. Every episode is like episodic. It doesn't have a story arc like you would with something like Doctor Who, whatever, for each season, but it starts to all fall together in the last two episodes, and it's so much better than The Rise of Skywalker. It's really what Star Wars probably should be concentrating on just now. It sort of ditches the whole Skywalker saga, does its own thing, and it really is fantastic and highly recommended for me. Have you seen it yet?
I've seen the first two episodes. I wasn't going to bother getting Disney Plus, but now I'm stuck at home and they've got 30 seasons of The Simpsons. I'm only going to get it for a few months.
You're going to have to cave in, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm not going to get like the 50 quid like for the year thing. Like, I can see the value to be had, but I think I'll only get a few months kind of worth out of it. So yeah, I'll probably book it up tomorrow and dive into some classic Simpsons.
Yeah, no, I was like, I saw the American stuff, but then I was like, to do it until the sort of Marvel stuff sort of came in. I know they are planning on releasing some stuff a bit early now. I mean, it's the way lots of things are going. They're releasing, they're jumping ship. I mean, I think the sound you're hearing is the theatrical window being shattered forever. I don't think it's ever going to be able to be the same, but I believe my sister has signed up for Disney Plus, and apparently she gets a couple of different skins in order to view it, so I might be lucky enough to get one, and I might chuck some stuff on while I'm working. I shouldn't say that. I will be working and then watching things after I work. Would never do the two things at the same time. Absolutely not. You wouldn't do that either, would you, Lee?
Absolutely. I certainly have not done that for several days now.
No, absolutely not, of course. So that brings us to the end of this episode. We hope you've enjoyed our sort of retrospective look back at some of our favourite film memories. Don't forget to let us know what maybe the first film you saw or what film you took a girl on a date for the first time. So let us know either at Join Nerd Party on Twitter or the Nerd Party on Instagram or Facebook. And you can get me at DallasKing1138 on Twitter. And Lee, where can people let you know what they thought of this episode and some of their favourite film memories?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo, and I'm sure at some point this week we will put up a poll for a future audio commentary as well, so be sure to follow at Join Nerd Party for that too.
Absolutely. So yeah, take care out there, stay safe, stay indoors, catch up on the A24 project. We've got about 55, 56 episodes now that you can catch up on, so it's a perfect way to spend the time, and we'll see you next week and see you soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.